Okay, I'm Rick, I'm an addict. Let's see, how about a moment of silence for the addict who still suffers, and then would you join me in a serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. All right. I feel better. That was for me, not for you. It didn't look like there were so many people out there when I was sitting over there, and I get up here and it's like, Jesus Christ. I did this one time before, and I always wanted to say fuck on tape, and I don't have to do it tonight, so got that one out of the way. Some of 3 years. Jesus, I'm scared to death, okay? So anybody as scared as I am out there, you're in the right fucking place. Okay, let's see. My drug of choice was lying, and I washed it down with anything I get my hands on, so I'm going to try not to do a whole lot of that tonight. It's kind of funny, you know, I got about 5 minutes here, so I'm going to keep mine short. You know, I used for a lot of years, and it wasn't pretty. There were some good times. I did have some fun. Many, many, many years ago, I was kind of like about as old as some of these guys up here, and then it changed real quick and got real, real different. I kind of like to talk about how I wound up in Visalia and what's happened since then. Almost 7 years to the day, May 1st will be 7 years ago, I wound up in Porterville. I was raised in Bakersfield and did a lot of my using and drinking and running around in Bakersfield, Oildale area. Burned a lot of bridges down there, there came a time when it seemed like when things got real bad, I would just I would go ask somebody for help, and as soon as I got better, I would return to using again. It was just like little pit stops, and that's kind of what I did for several years down there. In and out of meetings, in and out of recovery homes, in and out of institutions, just in and out of all kinds of stuff. What happened was I burned all my bridges up down there, and nobody wanted anything to do with me because I did a lot of talking along shit, and I never walked any of it, okay? And they just said, well, see you later, can't help you this time. So people started closing doors on me. At the time, I got real resentful. It hurt me, hurt my feelings. I didn't think anybody loved me anymore. I hated them son of a bitches. Today I realize that's one of the best things that ever, it is the best thing that ever happened to me. The quit, they call it enabling or something like that. And that's what those people did. You know, they shut the doors until there was only one left, you know, this one. So today I know that, you know, that was hard for some of them people to do, but it was also the best thing they did for me. I wound up in Porterville. It was a place called the Clean Center at the time. It was a little house where there was a bunch of dope fiends there trying to get clean, I guess. I don't really know what was happening there, and a friend of mine, or not really, he wasn't even a fucking friend. He had another motive for getting me out of town. He wanted my old lady. I knew that sucker, and it worked, and God bless him. Fool him. I got the best of his stick, that's for sure. But he dropped me off at this place at midnight. On a Saturday night, May 1st, I remember that day, and I was kicking this lightweight Jones. You know, I slam a lot of heroin, a lot. I slam a little bit of heroin, okay? I never had a lot of anything, because that's the best I could do. I wasn't a real good dope fiend. Anyway, I was doing this thing there, and I stayed there, I don't know, a couple months. I met Dave and several other people that I now know and that are close friends of mine. It just was like the same old thing, you know. It's like, what happened was, I got a little bit of money in my pocket, you know. the guy that was running the place gave me $60 one day, and I don't even know why he gave it to me. Maybe he wanted to see me get loaded. I don't know. But I did. You know, I had met these two junkies, and I knew where to score, and so that's what I did. And that was July 2nd or July 3rd of 1986. And I overdosed in this gutted out trailer on somebody's land. I think it was his mom's land or something. That's where they slept, these two brothers. And the only thing I remember about that day was I remember parts of it I was getting sprayed down with the water hose, you know, and I woke up at, I don't know, in the middle of the night, 3 or 4 in the morning on this picnic table in a sleeping bag, and I was naked, and I said, son of a bitch, what the, you know, you can imagine all things went through my head, and I looked around, and my pants were hanging up over here, and, you know, and my boots were over there, my shirt was there, and I didn't have any more money, so I thought, all right, you know, the next day, I didn't know what I was going to do. See, I was on parole at the time, and I was like, well, that's how I is. Complicated story, and I don't got enough time. But anyway, I didn't know what to do. It's stretching, this is going like this. I didn't know what to do at the time. So I didn't know where I was going to stay, what I was going to do. All I knew was I didn't have no money. You know, I didn't have no car, I didn't have no job, I didn't have nothing. All I had was all my little shit in this bag, and that was it. So I called Dave, and I had met him in the clean center, and I did a little sniveling, and you guys can still snivel here until you've been here 5 years, and you got to quit. And if you're brand new, you can really snivel. I did a little sniveling and said, I don't have any place to stay, and fucking wah. And, you know, anyway, it worked out, and I'm in Visalia, July 4th, 1986, and I don't know anybody except Dave and a few people I had bumped into in meetings in this county. I got no money, no job, and I'm living with some dude named 90 Day Dave, you know, and I thought, the hell, this is good, you know, and this is good. But it wasn't bad for me because I had been in some real, they pulled out the couch. This was really great. Gave me my own little room, better than I had had in many a moon, believe me. Behind this couch, got me a little mattress, and that was my space, and it was cool. And those people, Jerry and her parents, they're like my second family, and they've done a lot for me here, and I love them for it, and I appreciate it. Anyway, I didn't get clean. No, that wasn't enough. Kept shifting. I think I'm looking around the room. I think Dave's about the only one in here today that I ever used with in this county. I didn't use for very long in this county. I lasted about 6 months. You know, my runs were getting shorter and shorter and shorter. My very last one was about 10 days. That's all I could do before I went, well, help me. You know, that's all I could do, man. And it was lightweight, you know, hustle, nickel dime here, nickel dime there, that's all. Nothing glamorous that I did out there. Four people 12-stepped me one day. A guy had loaned me a car. By the way, I had to leave that place because I couldn't stay clean to Dave's parents' house. I had to leave, and that's cool. That's the rules, you know. And I knew the rules, all right? And I chose to use, and, you know, that was the price. To me at the time, it was no big deal. So you get out there going, what the hell am I going to do now? But anyway, this dude had loaned me a car. He was in recovery. Had more balls than I have. And loaned this using junkie a car to sleep in, and he got me a job and trying to help me out. And I was still using. Oh, by the way, Don, I did spend 30 days in Farmersville. Okay, don't let me forget Farmersville. I used in Farmersville. But anyway, he gave me this car, and I slept in it. And there's parking lots around here that I slept in that, you know, I don't know to this day which ones they were, because you let me go on the streets in this town, I was lost. I didn't know how to get around. One day, what happened was I was shooting dope back here on Ray Street in some alley in this apartment, these apartments, and it was just a shooting gallery. And I was doing this thing, man. I had about 50 cents. I quit the job once I got a paycheck, by the way, and bought me some dope. And I was turning it, you know, Mickey Mouse little nickel or little $20 bags, and, you know, just doing it and shooting as much as I could do and turning it as much as I could do. And I don't know how much it was. It wasn't very much, okay? And one day, men don't like to, at least this man doesn't like to admit that he cries, okay? But one day I did that, and it was kind of a strange situation, I think, because these people, man, in this apartment were not real sympathetic to any of my problems, okay? And they didn't really give a shit if I felt like shit inside because I was using, you know? See, I'd already had a real head full of the 12 steps and you know, an armful of heroin just wasn't mixing, and it was tearing me up inside. I just didn't realize it. And this woman, I'm getting better. This woman, I mean, she's bigger than me, and she's, I mean, she looks rough. She could probably whoop me, and I wouldn't want to run across her in a dark alley, believe me. And one day I just kind of looked at her, and I just went, you know, and held on to her. What was happening, man, was this shit was just eating me up inside. She kind of looked at me like, what the hell are you doing, you know, and didn't understand. Maybe she did, I don't know, but she looked at me and said, what a wimp, you know, and I left, and I went to a meeting, or I went to talk to somebody, and there was four guys, and none of them are in this room tonight, I don't think, and they 12-stepped me, I guess you could call it, and I went into recovery, and I went into Pine Recovery Center, and I lived there for 14 months, and needed every goddamn day of it, believe me, and was affiliated with that organization for about 3.5 years, and I needed every day of that too, and started getting better. Jesus, I lost track of time. Sure, you don't want to be the short one? No. no ego here. But anyway, you know what happened was in that place, that recovery center reintroduced me to the 12 steps. You know, we had to go to a lot of AA meetings, and after a while, I got to go to some NA meetings, and after a while, I even wanted to stay clean. You know, it took about 5 months or so. And I finally realized, I finally thought out long enough to see Rick for Rick, to see Rick's life for what Rick's life was, and to say, hey, you know what, I want to do something about it. You know, I'm tired. There's that saying, sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I realized it that day. I had been that way for a long time, but I didn't realize it. And that's when I made a commitment to change, you know. I've been in juvenile halls, mental institutions, county jails, and state prisons all because of drug addiction. And I was tired of that. I had lost families, jobs, etc., blah, 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 blah. And I was tired of it, you know. You know what? I was an empty shell of a man, okay? There was nothing inside. I don't even know if I had the capacity to like. You know, they say love. I don't even know if I could like anybody. You know, that's the truth. I used to sit around in the back of the meetings with my arms folded and frown. I got wrinkles up here, but I'm really not that old. I used to scowl and sit there like this and angry person. And still have a lot of that. I'm just not as bad as I used to be. I found a higher power. I guess, you know, that's the saving grace for me. I found a higher power. Nothing else worked for me. You know, I had tried churches. I had tried self-medication. I just couldn't get the dosage right. I had tried, you know, all kinds of ways to stop, to control, to make it work, and it just wouldn't do it. It just wouldn't work. And I got into recovery 12-step programs and found a higher power, and that's what worked. You know, this is what it's all about. You know, if I want to leave any message, get across any message tonight, it's spirituality, higher power, whatever you want to call it. I call it God. Talks about it in the first two steps, or the first three, second and the third, and it talks about it in the 11th and 12th. And I think that's there for a reason. You know, the end result is spirituality, conscious contact with God of your understanding, and after a spiritual awakening, carry the message. You know, and for me, that's what it's all about. I don't know how many of you believe in miracles, but I've OD'd several times and I'm still breathing. I was laying on a kitchen floor for an hour on a heroin overdose and I survived. Nobody there. To me, that's a miracle. And I look at it like this, from a guy who comes from where I come from and where he's at today, that's a miracle. You know, I can even hold down a job. I've worked, shit, how long? Five, almost 6 years in a row. In a row, man. Record. We're setting new records here every day. And I make more than $25.50 a month, I'll guarantee you. $25.50. That's pay numbers. The only time I got two cars, okay, and these are some material things, but I got two cars and the only time I sleep in them is when she gets mad at me. My wife is back there. She's standing because she's afraid I'll say something about her, she can run out real quick. But you know what? You know that emptiness I talked about? You know, that big hole in the gut that I had, you know? That's being filled up. You know, that's what's happening. That's being filled up. I think I can like a lot of people now. You know, I think I can like a lot of people. I don't do a lot of the things that I used to do. You know, I quit stealing after, you know, oh, I don't know, 7 or 8 months being clean. I quit stealing. And I probably quit lying about 2 days ago, and as much, I just don't do it as often, and a lot of those things, you know, there's a lot of things every time I do this, or I act like I do this a lot, every time I've done something or spoken to me, I always sit down or and I quit and I say, you know, I should have said that, or I should have, why didn't I say that? But, you know, I guess I said what I was supposed to say tonight, and I like to congratulate all the birthday people, you know, happy birthday. Anybody that's new, you know, welcome. It really is a good way of life, you know, it really is. I mean, sometimes I got two offices, like I'm important, and I sit back in one of them, and I'll put my feet up on the desk, and I'll laugh, and I'll go, son of a bitch, man, do they even know who they got in here? You know, you know what I mean? It's like, and it blows me away, you know? It's just mind-boggling. Some days it's just like that. And it's like, yeah, you know? I mean, I don't walk down, you know, down the street looking in gutters for spare change and stealing shit, you know? I stole from my last employer here. Not my last, but one of them that hired me, I stole some shit so I can get a fix, you know? I don't do that anymore. There's just so many things, you know, so many things. Keep coming back, and it really does work. We used to say it a lot around here, give yourself 90 meetings in 90 days, and if you don't like what we have to offer, we'll gladly refund your misery. You know, and for me, that's what it was. Thank you.
See, he's a warm-up speaker, and he got introduced.
My name's Dave, and I'm an addict. I'm going to get this stuff out of here. I'll start reading it and won't even do anything. I was sitting back there thinking, right before Rick got up, to come up here, you know, I'm wanting him to do a good job and everything, and he got up and he started getting laughs, and I'm going, oh shit, he's doing too good, you know, I'm not going to be able to follow that, you know, and then my brain even started telling me he was using the ones I was going to use, and that's a lie, it wasn't. But this thing I have up here between my two ears, driving down here from Selma, I've been to a wedding earlier, and I was real nervous about being at the wedding, and so being nervous there, I didn't get to like pay attention about coming here. So the ride down here, I played the meeting in my head. Well, actually, the disease like shows me a movie of the meeting, you know, coming down, and it showed me like three different versions of the meeting from Kingsburg to Goshen. And in two of them, Rick did exactly what he did. It was like, oh no. I bring this up a lot sometimes in some meetings. I think sometimes it embarrasses Rick, but that's all right. There was a time when people used to come to meetings to like hear if Rick and I were going to cop to getting loaded. You know, there was a lot of people that shared, well, that's what, you know, that's the only thing that keeps me coming around, you know. Are you guys going to give that chip up, or what's your excuse this week, and everything. And, like, one of the miracles of the program is that, you know, over 6 years later, here we are standing up here talking about being clean, and being clean for 6 years. Jeez. I remember thinking, like, if I could just get past 90 days, you know, 6 years is, that to me, that was Star Trek time. You know, and people with 6 years, I'd listen to them share, and I'd go home and, like, kind of change some of the words in it that they said, and then the next meeting I went to, if they weren't there, then I gave their pitch. You know? I started using a long time ago, I don't know why I didn't catch on right from the gate. The first drug I ever took was alcohol. Got massively drunk, I'm so nervous. Got sick, sicker than a dog, to the point of I was thinking about this the other day, and I had forgot all about these bed spins. Yeah, there was a lot of years that I quit having the bed spins. I had forgot all about those, you know. And in the early drunkenness, I mean, that was like part of it. And, hold on to the bed and scream and, whoa, here we go, you know. And that first drunk, I got those bed spins and I headed for the bathroom. And by the time I got to the bathroom, I had to relieve myself, and all I had on was my underwear, and I couldn't get that fly thing to work. So I had to pull them down around my knees, and as I bent over to pull them around my knees, then I got sick. And I'm vomiting, and I'm trying not to wet on everything, and I'm trying to get these underwear back up, and the very next time they offered me a drink, I was ready to go. Which, you know, it's real living proof, too, of why it runs in the family. At the time, I think my sister was like 10 years old, and the door was open when this was happening, and she's going, oh, you're so fucking gross. You make me sick. And here she is in the program, you know. I couldn't conceive that I was having a problem, but I don't know very many people who started out with, a six-pack of Coors Talls at like 13, 14 years old, and within 6 months, eating little F-40s and falling out in history class, doing that. You guys ever notice how the red freaks whisper? Well, drunks do it too, you know, the old drunk whisper. Hey, quiet, don't let anybody hear you. You know, So after I fell out of my chair in history class, that's how I was trying to get back into my desk, and I'm telling the girl up front, like, shh, be quiet, you're going to blow it for me. And I never thought I had a problem. I found out in this program My drunk-a-log and drug-a-log and everything is really no different than anybody else's. Rick described mine perfectly. It's like, but I noticed something about me, though, that I can stand up here and tell you I was a poo-butt junkie, and I, you know, God, I'd like to tell you I did a lot of prison time, and I'd like to show you a lot of tattoos and stuff, and I don't have that, and I wish I could talk about dealing a lot of drugs, but I didn't, you know, because I tried to deal. But as soon as I got it in my house, it started out with, geez, I'm going to make this much money. Well, I don't really need that much. I'll make this much. Well, you know, if I just make the money back, I still got a lot of dope here. Yeah. But, you know, even if I lose $100, I still shot a lot of dope, and you know, and I actually shot a lot of dope that would cost more than that $100. I'm doing pretty good. By 6 o'clock the next morning, I had sold a dime bag, and I ain't giving up anymore. And to tell you the truth, I pinched that dime bag. And that's when it was going good. By then, I couldn't even, you know, I think the last big quantity I bought was like right before I ended up in the clean center. You know, and it's been, I can't even, I remember the price, but I don't remember the size. I probably got burned, so I don't want to know. I'm not going to give you the price. And, I bought it on a Friday night, and it's going to last me all week. Saturday night at 2 o'clock. Oh, Friday night at 2 o'clock. Saturday morning, 2 o'clock. I got up to go to the bathroom and thought, whoops, while I'm up, might as well do some. And at 4 o'clock I got up. Oh, well, I'm up. By 10:30 the next morning, I was down to pounding cottons. And that was one of the last times I OD'd. And mine was like, I came to in the bathroom, holding on to the kitchen sink in the bathroom. Good dope. I came to, and I'm holding on to the bathroom sink, and I'm staring at myself in the mirror. And I'm looking, and the rig's on the floor, and I got blood on my arm, and it's caked on, and I'm like, oh, geez. You know, and I'm at my parents' house in the bathroom. So I start cleaning everything up real quick and thinking, well, okay, I got to come out looking good, and I've still got all that tingly all over, you know, from getting blood circulation back to my body or whatever, to the brain maybe. And I'd gone in there at 10 o'clock, and when I walked out, it was 10:45. And that was real spooky. It stopped me. It was just real spooky. Plus, it gave me a good story to tell at the connections when I went down there and stuff. I got forced into recovery. It wasn't anything that I wanted to do. The only place I could find that would take me was a place up in Vallejo. It was called the Genesis House. And it was based on Synanon. So I got to experience some Synanon recovery for about, hell I know, down to the minute, 75 days. As soon as the hair grew out enough that I could put some Vaseline on it and get that porcupine out of there, I was off and going. They cut me loose in Vallejo and gave me 25 cents for a phone call. And they dropped me off at the liquor store. I'm like, what am I going to do with this quarter? And I knew I couldn't get back home, though, if I got loaded. So I didn't. I made a phone call, and they came up and picked me up, and they told me I had to go to this. They found this place in Porterville. And they took me there. And I ended up staying clean for a little while longer in there. And That's where I met Rick and a few other people around here. And Rick and I decided to sponsor each other for a little while. And we'd look at each other and go,
"Hey, what the fuck, yeah."
I mean, you know, my thinking couldn't be that. I mean, what I couldn't get across was like, see, when I'd only have 1 or 2 days, when this thing would start talking to me about getting loaded, it's like, what am I giving up? 1 or 2 days. You know, I can do 2 days. It's that third day I can't do. You know, that third day I always got loaded on. But I'd start thinking, you know, I ain't giving up nothing. And, you know what I wouldn't tell the old lady? And then she'd do this stupid stuff like keep track of it on the calendar. And they'd get loaded and stuff and wouldn't say anything and go to meetings and, yeah, give my pitch. And I think that was right then, it was about the only time I really read the book. And that was just to find something real neat that I could share in the meeting that night, you know. And damn it, about 99% of the time somebody beat me to it. They'd share right before I would, you know. And I'm like, oh, that's what I was going to do. Oh, hell no. And then, you know, oh, tonight you're supposed to get a 30-day chip. Oh, yeah, that's right, you know. And then go to the meeting and get a 30-day chip. And everybody would clap and you'd have to go, my name's Dave, I got 30 days. And this thing back here is going, you lying piece of shit. You ain't got nothing. You got 12 minutes is what you got. You can't even get loaded right. And if you're such a tough junkie, why are you hiding it from mommy? You know, and just kept doing that. And thank God there was this guy that used to come to the meetings around here. Well, he didn't quit coming out of his own choice. Well, Reverend Roy would, every time I'd share about getting loaded and giving up, you know, give my chip back or whatever, he'd always yell back, "Why don't you go out there and get it done? Get it over with. Quit screwing around." And he'd get done and I'd think, God, somebody could get hurt. You know? I didn't have any idea he was talking to me. I just, you know, I thought, God, you know, he ain't got nothing I want. And I don't know why, but at one point, at the end there, Rick and I left at the same time. I ran, Rick got asked to leave. And I went and lived over in a place in Leemore, and that's where I grew up. I called the guy up and said, I'm on my way. I had $1,000 in my pocket, and it took me 3 days to get to Leemore. And by the time I got to Leemore, I had $100 and half an ounce of marijuana. And that was all I had left. And in that 3 days' time, I had a Jones going like I had when I quit and first came into recovery. You know, and it started making me think that, like, these guys kept telling me, you pick up where you left off. And I, no way, man, get clean for a while. You know, it's back to $10. And it's back to $10 for about 30 seconds. And in January, I had enough. I was contemplating suicide, but I couldn't figure out how to do it and not have anybody not like me. You know, if I was going to do that, if I was going to give the ultimate sacrifice, I wanted to make sure people were going to show up at the funeral. And there was a kid in high school who had committed suicide when I was going to high school, and he did it, and some kids, little kids found him. And I remember all anybody ever said about him was, what a punk. And that's all that kept running through my head. It's like, oh, you know, my luck, the kids will find me, and nobody will come to the funeral. I mean, I couldn't even contemplate suicide without sniveling. And I came in January. I start coming back to meetings on January 15th. My sobriety date's January 19th. I found a bottle of codeine cough syrup at my parents' house, and I developed a slight cough. And I was having trouble sleeping, and I needed to do that. And I got into Narcotics Anonymous and started coming and made the commitment to do the 90 meetings in 90 days. And I went to like about 180 of them in 60 days. And some guy told me, see, you can't even do that right. And I had to stick around because at my second meeting I said I was going to stick around. And for the first time I knew I was going to, you know, I had this like inner feeling that I was going to stick around. And plus I was sick and tired of looking like shit at meetings and eating my words. And you know, I ended up getting a job moving up to Fresno and spent my first year of recovery up in Fresno. And then that's when the insanity hit. I didn't talk about the insanity of using. I'll tell you what, my insanity in recovery has been, well, it's a lot more enjoyable. I put it that way. Sometimes it's like I want to sit around here and go, geez, I'm sorry, are the noises in my head bothering you? Because I got all this stuff going off in there. And you know, because I used to share in meetings and not even realize what I was sharing, but it would be like, I knew I was screwed up before I ever took dope, before I ever drank. I was a weird little kid. I knew that. I was a thief before I ever took anything. You know, I was stealing those little 10-cent rubber knives from the dime store at second and third grade. And lying, hell, you know, I'd lie when the truth would work better. I'd lie just to see if I could get away with lying, and I'd lie just to get mad because you, whatever I'm telling you, you're supposed to believe me anyway if you really love me. And so when I screwed around in this program for 3 years, to some extent. I mean, I didn't get loaded. I played it working the steps. I would work them until the pain went away, and then I'd quit. I'd get me a sponsor when it would benefit me to like share in a meeting that I got a sponsor, and so I could stop this little voice from saying, you're lying about the sponsor. And I was still doing what I did out there on the street. I didn't give nothing up until it got so bad I didn't have any choice. And I've been working in I don't know if you want to call it recovery. I've been working with alcoholics and dope fiends for the last close to 5 years. And you know what? That was the best thing that ever happened to me. I would sit in there in these groups with these people, and I'd talk to them, you know, and they'd bring stuff up, and I'd give advice. And it was advice about stuff that I hadn't done. You know, and I'd have this little voice in my head go, are you telling them that? And you ain't even done it yet. And you're getting paid for it. You know, and it ate me up. One of the things I learned how to do coming into thing is I learned how to switch addictions. And one of the biggest ones was people, especially of the opposite sex. And, you know, thank God. I mean, you know, they talk about don't get in a relationship in your first year. Do it. Do it, man. Get it on. Find out what you got to do. You know, I mean, that's what I suggest. Why are you going to hide? If you spend a year and don't be in a relationship, what are you going to do when year two comes? All of a sudden, you think you know something about relationships? You know, I'll tell you what, relationships kept me in meetings. Relationships hooked me up with sponsors. And the very last relationship I was in a couple of years ago got me to work the steps. You know, I hate to stand up here. You know, I'd like to say, $500 worth of heroin kicked my ass. I came in here, got clean, worked the steps, had a sponsor, never thought about using. Yep. Little blonde, about 5 foot nothing, kicked my ass. It finally ended up at 3 years clean, which it had happened at 2 years clean too, but, you know, I just got the sponsor long enough to like start writing stuff down. And the neat thing was, I was, you know, you gotta watch out. If you learn how to talk good shit here, you gotta watch out. People are gonna come up and ask you to be their sponsor. And that's what happened to me. And I'll be damned, this guy wanted to work the steps. And he got on his fourth. And I kept going, you need to write more. And then I'd run into rooming. And he'd bring it back the next day. I'd go, no, I don't think you've gone into enough detail yet. Take it home and write some more. Like, damn, when's this guy going to go away? At 3 years, at 2 years, I went completely stark raving clean and was asking people to, like, put me in a mental home, mental institution, something. I ended up fetal position in bed, quit bathing, went back to wearing the clothes I wore out on the street, quit shaving, angry. I even tried to, like, start a fight up at a dance at Three Rivers, and the guy just came by and said, hey, Dave, how you doing? Fuck you. You know? And I knew it had to be her fault that I was like this, but I found out later it wasn't. I worked the steps. Pain went away. I put the steps away. Fired the sponsor. Left town. And proceeded to do the exact same thing. And, you know, what I found out is, like, so what I did, what I would do, I haven't really had that much chance to put it in practice since I found all this stuff out, but see, what I do is, like, I get these ladies, see, and like, if I got a pretty lady on my arm, you're going to look at her, and you're not going to pay attention to me. And that's what I did. But then again, see, then I felt I had to protect that a whole lot too. You know, because if anybody went near that, that was really gonna screw me up. Well, I did the steps, I did a fourth, and found out all this neat stuff, and when I went and had to go make an amends to that little blonde and explain all of this stuff, when I was talking to her, this just, like, goes to show how my brain works. I'm explaining this stuff to her, and she tells me that, like, the rumor had been going around that she was gay. I'm going, oh my God. All these months, I had been walking around with this woman, going into places with her on my arm, going, look at me, I'm Mr. Studley. I'm a manly man, yes, that's what I am, and, you know, and you know, projecting all this stuff into these people's heads, like, whoa, boy, that guy must, you know, and everything else. And what was really going on is, they thought she was gay. And that I was too. And that we were just going out together to cover up for each other. So it really killed my look good, I'm telling you. You know, I mean, here I've been walking around like this, and everybody else thinks I'm swishing, and I'm thinking I'm, you know. I don't know, I've got to find out a lot about myself in recovery, the insanity of this thing. Then after that lovely person kicked my ass, has anybody in here, like, experienced a breakup in recovery?
Oh!
Well, I mean a breakup where you, like, go through it. Not a breakup where you go get another old lady, like, 3 weeks later and decide this is the right one. Anybody ever done that? I meant guys. I'll tell you what, I got in touch with how sick I really am. Come home, walking up to the house, you get within 10 feet from the door, and all of a sudden that voice goes, she left a note. Walk a little faster, get up there. Oh, there's no note on the door. Shit. Oh, dang it. I open the door to go in the house, and just as I open the door, the little voice goes, "Red light's flashing on the answer machine. It's her." Oh. Run over there. No red light flashing. Oh, God. Driving around town, every black car I saw, there she is. Watching where it's going, and if it turned the wrong way, I'd go up and I'd follow it, you know, and I'd get right up behind it and realize, it's not her. So I'd turn around. You know, I'm only going like 2-3 miles out of my way. And I'd turn around, come back. And as I'm heading back, here come another black car this way. One time it really was her. And I get up behind her and I'm going, shit, it's her. What do I do? So I pull up alongside her and went, and boom, down, die. Pull over the side of the road, turned off, you know, looking good, using all signals at all time, hand signals. Like I have no place really to go that's important. Get down far enough where I know she can't see me just in case she's got binoculars. Put the car in gear or in park and sit there and go. And then my brain just going, oh, you punk, man, you blew it. That was it. That was the time. Did you see the way she looked at you? I think she still loves you. So I go back and look for her car again. And I couldn't find it. And then one day, I was taking a shower, and the phone rang. And it only rang once, and it hung up. And I went, what the heck was that? You know, and I was continuing to wash my hair, and all of a sudden, I knew it. It was her. So I jumped out of the shower, dripping wet, soap still in my hair, run over to the phone, ring. I was just letting her know I knew it was her. And I got in the shower, got back in the shower, got my head under the water, rang, and hung up. She's sending me a message. She loves me. So I jumped back out of the shower, ran over to the phone, rang. I was just telling her back. Got back in the shower. Ring, ring. I decided to finish the shower. Didn't dry off. Then I called back. Is that you calling me? Yeah. What do you want? Is there something I can do for you? You know, I was in the shower. Then why did you call me? To let you know that I knew it was you calling me. We got back together for another month. And the weirdest thing happened. I knew it wasn't right. I knew I wasn't supposed to. I had, like, done all this step stuff and everything else, and I figured all this neat stuff about me, and I set out. I was working at a place in Fresno, and it was a 90-day treatment center for parole violators, and they were already in bed, and I'm sitting out on the picnic table out in the yard, and I go, you know what, God, I'm stupid,
and I need a sign. I mean, there's a part of me that knows I shouldn't be doing this, but there's a part of me that thinks I need to keep doing this because all this neat new stuff I've learned. And so, like, I need a burning bush. You got to write it on the wall. You got to do something where I'm going to get it because I need to know what to do. Do I get out of this or hang with it? 2 days later, I get a phone call at work. I can't do this anymore. I can't see you again. Goodbye. Huh? Hey, wait a minute. Click, hangs up. And I start going on into all that insanity again and getting crazy. And all of a sudden, I remembered that prayer. There's my burning bush. But I didn't get it the way I wanted it. See, I forgot to, like, let him in on that. I forgot to give, like, the... be real specific. The burning bush was to tell me if I'm supposed to stay in it or if I'm supposed to dump her. Not her to me. Oh, I just lost the train of thought there. So anyway, I finally... Oh. Then I had to teach myself this neat new thing. I don't know about any of you guys, if anybody can relate to this, but, you know, when you're splitting up, all of a sudden you remember these things that are, like, very important that maybe you left at her house. Like that bookmark. That 29-cent Bic pin that your mom gave you for your 18th birthday. Noticing that maybe her tires had worn just a little bit right before you split up. Maybe you should call and see how her tires are. And I had to learn how to not make that phone call. So the way I learned how to not make that phone call was I found me something else to do every time I wanted to make that phone call. I did paint by numbers. Within 3 months, I had that apartment filled. I had ducks. One of those things out there on with the fog for the ships. lighthouses. I had lighthouses. I had mooses, deers, puppies, kitties, goldfish, polar bears and snowstorms. We had a dining room table that was lined all the way around. We had it propped up. I had propped up. We had a mantle. I had them all the way across there. We had a bookshelf. I had them up over that. I had 3 of them on top of the TV and 6 more on the other far bookshelf. I would stay up till 3 o'clock. The only reason I quit painting was because at 3 o'clock in the morning, I'd smoke so many dang cigarettes and my back was cramping. I wasn't making the phone call, but here's what I was doing. I'm painting and having the phone call in my head. Oh, yeah, and then she says this. And I say that. And it always ends up where I win, you know? And she actually sees the errors of her ways and has to come back. Fourteen phone calls in 32 seconds I can do. I counted them. And one night my roommate and I, he'd watch me do all this stuff, you know, and we were watching an HBO special one night about people who had killed other people. And this one kid killed this girl, a cheerleader. And he had become obsessed over, had like photographs and everything else, and they were interviewing him, and he says, well, I finally figured out there's only one way I could stop the obsession was I had to kill her. And very straight-faced, I turned to my roommate, and I go, that's it, she must die. It was, Dave, I don't think I've ever read that in the steps anywhere. Do you think maybe this way you should call your sponsor? I had to go down to the school one day, and I had to pick up some stuff at the school, Fresno City College, and there was her car. So I parked my motorcycle right where she could see it when she came out and got in her car. I know that because what I did is I went out, I parked the bike and I went over to where her car was and stood next to it, went like this, like I was sitting in the driver's seat. Yeah, I can see it from here. And, you know what the spooky thing is I'm telling people how to get clean through all this too, you know. I'm claiming 3 years, 3 years clean and helping other people to get clean and not saying like, well, you know, as long as you don't use, it's okay to obsess and chase people around all over town. And so I left a note on the windshield. And I come back home, I get off the bike, and I come walking past my roommate real fast, and he goes, hey, what are you doing? Yeah. And I went in, and I thought to myself, why are you feeling so guilty? What are you, like, sneaking for? So I went back out, and I said, hey, you know what? I left a note on your car. He says, oh, man, you're screwed. I said, why? He says, well, if she gets a note, and she doesn't call you, you're screwed. And if she gets a note, and she calls you, you're screwed. I went, oh, yeah, I'm screwed. So I got on the bike, raced back down there real quick, took the note off the door, off the window, and my fingerprints off the doors. And then after that, I moved down here to Visalia, and finally, about to my third day here in Visalia, I had to pull over on 198 and go, okay, you and me, we're going to have a talk here. We're in Visalia. She doesn't live here. Quit looking for the car. I goes, oh, okay. And, you know, that taught me a lot about me. I'll tell you what. I mean, I can laugh about it now because it's done. It's over with. And I, you know, a couple of years ago when I spoke here a couple of years ago and I talked about that I needed to, you know, take the next step beyond 12 steps because of some stuff. And that's one of the reasons why. And, you know, and it's not about that the 12 steps don't work, and it's not about that, I mean, because the 12 steps worked great. They, like, helped me to realize all this stuff, but there were some things I couldn't quit doing. You know, even though with all the knowledge I had and everything. And, you know, I went through some head shrinking type stuff, and it doesn't have anything to do with, like, you know, I'm not up here to, like, say, oh, my inner child was bruised or injured, or that, you know, because of my mom and dad, that's why I'm the way I am, and no, that's not why. At 3 years clean and sober, I'd lost my job, lost my old lady, dropped out of school, was completely insane, was about to be evicted, and this was the second time in recovery, and I was done. And I pulled up at a stoplight on Blackstone Avenue, just completely panicked and freaked out and thinking, I don't know what the hell's going to go on. I'm completely out of my mind. I'm nuts. Look at this craziness I'm going through and everything. And all of a sudden this calmness just shot through me. And this little voice goes, it's going to be okay. And in the same instant, you're going to die. That's what I'm But that was coming from up here. The calm voice came from down here. And I got into working the steps. And through the steps, I got to find out about my higher power. And my higher power has been right here the whole time. And, you know, I thank God for this program. You know, I did some really crazy things. And some, you know, some people, like, didn't want to hang around me too much at the time. But nobody condemned me. And they let me go through what I had to go through. And I needed to get into that other stuff because I'm raising a kid by myself. And I don't know how to raise a kid. I don't know how to do it. What I learned to be a parent was from my parents. And look at me. You know? And I just need to learn some other things. I needed to go back and I needed to separate what was right and what worked and what didn't work. Not what was right and wrong. Just what worked and what didn't work. And I did that. And it's been very helpful to me. You know, I've gotten rid of a lot of the fear. I was very, very much afraid of everybody. I would come into meetings my first 3 years still scared to death, even though I knew all you people. I would pull up here in the parking lot and go, you know, great, I'm gonna see old so and so and everything, and that fear would hit me right at the front door, and I couldn't do anything about it. I would be in it and couldn't get out. And I would just sit here like this, and everybody would say, oh, yeah, Dave, you know what, an asshole, he don't talk to anybody. I was scared to death, and I couldn't move. You know? And it'd take like a whole meeting before I'd finally loosen up, and somebody'd come up, you know, I'd allow somebody to give me a hug. I even went through a period where I wasn't hugging. I was shaking hands. And, you know, and I just had to learn where all of that came from. And I had some anger in me that I needed to get out that was like about 30 years old. And I went through like about 8 or 9 months around here very angry. It's not that I didn't like anybody here. It was just I was angry. And at work there, you know, they go, yeah, here it comes. Get out of the way. You know, and people, hey, Dave, how you doing? Yeah, you know, the miracle is that I haven't felt that fear in a long time. And the miracle is like, even though as nervous as I got before I was going to do this, I knew it was just being nervous. I mean, yeah, I had the fear of like, you know, screwing up and things like that, but I also know that like the people who care about me and stuff out here, I can't screw up. You know, they're still going to like me whether I do a good job or not. And I was telling Frank out front, I said, yeah, I'm developing that alcoholic telepathy where all of a sudden I know what everybody here is thinking. You know, and it's not the good stuff. I've become a real good parent. I still have my son in counseling, and the neat thing was I got a propensity for violence with my kids. My daughter never had to experience any of it, but my son did. And I don't spank. I never did when I was hitting, and I don't today when I don't hit. I didn't spank. I got pissed, and I took it out on them. And I don't want to do that anymore. My kids can learn without that. My kids aren't animals. I don't have to beat them into submission. You know, my kid is like, he's a miracle. He goes out and plays ball. And last year he was playing a pretty close game and everything. He come in for relief and he gave up the game-winning home run. The difference between me and him is if I'd have done that, I'd have never played baseball again. That's it, I'm done. And I patted him on the back, it's a good game and everything, you know, and a couple hours later we were joking around and I acted like I was being an interviewer, you know, for TV, and I said, so Eric, what's it feel like to give up the game-winning home run? He goes, oh, knock it off, it's just a game. I don't know how many times I've heard around this program, you want to learn how to live life, watch the kids. You know, they'll tell you how to do it. I hate it when my kid turns on me and goes, aren't you supposed to tell the truth there, Dad? Well, son, you know, you don't want to really hurt people's feelings. And I said, no, you're right. And my son knows about my addiction. He asked a lot of questions about it. He wants to know a lot about it. My son's been clean now for over 4 years. He'll have 5 years in November. My daughter never got to see me under the influence or was way too young to ever know it. She doesn't quite understand it, but I got a little kid that, I mean, you know, I watch Denial in a 7-year-old. She's like, ask some questions. I go, wait, yeah, you want to know about it? And I'll start to like tell her some about it and I can watch her click off. Click. I'm done. I don't want to hear anymore. La la la, and off she goes. And it's kind of a rough one. And I have my daughter still living in the disease. She lives up north with her mom, and they're still, you know, spreading the disease pretty good. And You know, that's one of the lessons of powerlessness that I get in this, I have to deal with through this program. And I really appreciate being able to come down here. And for anybody that's new, you know, welcome in, and I hope you stick around. Do or don't. I mean, there's nothing here that anybody's going to do that's going to make you stay clean. There's nothing anybody could do that made me stay clean. But I'll tell you what. You hang around these meetings long enough, and you hear all this stuff going on, and the stuff you think you're not listening to, you're getting it anyway. And I was like Rick at the end. It's like I had even told myself, there ain't no way I'm going to feel guilty over this one. I got this one coming. And no matter how much dope I put in there, it all turned to guilt once it hit my bloodstream. It's like, man, they'd be going, okay, come on, man, we're going to get loaded. All right, do it. All right, ooh, it's going to be great. This is going to be neat. This is going to be boom. Oh, you stupid bastard, what'd you do? You just blew a month and a half. You just blew this. And it'd run all this stuff out and tell me what else, you know. And then you know what I'd do? I'd open up that little white book and read it. I go, wait, I think I got something backwards here. I don't know. I'll tell you what I was trying to make is I wouldn't wish that on anybody. I wouldn't wish that on my worst friend or worst enemy or worst friend. It hurts. I've never felt anything more painful in my whole life. I would rather do broken bones than feel that again. And by the grace of God and the 12 steps finally, and like what Rick was saying, man, that hole's getting filled up, and it's getting filled up good, and I like it. You know, I'll leave you with something that I heard the other night, and I know you've heard it around here about the light at the end of the tunnel. I heard this thing the other night, and I really liked it. It says, you know what, stick around. The light at the end of the tunnel just might be you. And I hope everybody sticks around to see if that's true. Thank you.